ॐ वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दोग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्सः सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महात् मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्. वि आर् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि सिक्स्थ् चाप्टर् आफ् दि भगवद्गीता. लार्ड् कृष्ण is beautifully defining that this is also called the chapter of meditation or Atma Sanyama Yoga. How a person has to constantly meditate. Usually, we have the idea that meditation means only sitting in a particular posture and then closing the eyes and thinking about God or Brahman or some divine subject. But one point we have to be very clear, that meditation is more of deep thinking, whether we are in a particular posture or not. Of course, if we have time, and when we have time, then there is a beautiful opportunity, especially at the two junctions of the time, called dawn and dusk, also called sandhya. It's a very appropriate time because nature also helps us in so many ways to focus our mind. So that is absolutely fine. But what is important is to remember God. To remember God means to know that God is the only reality. Everything else is very temporary. So if we can keep that in mind and constantly think about only the reality of God, and that gives us the strength to overcome the ups and downs that life always presents us. This is the time when everybody is very much concerned, and that's why they're extraordinarily fearful, worrying whether this virus is going to catch me. But as I mentioned many times, and I mention even now, that if at all we have to catch, and if something has to happen to us, it is not because of the virus. A virus is only a lame excuse. It is because of our prarabdha karma, really speaking. But spiritual practice has nothing to do with overcoming merely the problems of life. Spiritual quest is to find out the reality and to feel that I am that reality, to become identified with that reality. For that, mind control is absolutely necessary. One important point Krishna is telling, making clarification, whatever be the path, whatever be the religion, we need this absolute concentration, focus, and also self-discipline. So, let us keep these three points in mind. Our goal should be very strong. Our final goal should not be one among other goals, but not even the first enumeration of the goal, but it should be the only goal. Every other goal must be subsidiary, helping us to reach that particular goal, which is to reach God. The second is, whatever be the path, whatever be the religion, whatever be our effort, whatever we study, it must have only one purpose in mind, and that is, it should help us to move forward towards God. That is called concentration. Third is, in life, so many ups and downs, heat and cold, happiness and unhappiness, friends and enemies, praise and blame, gain and loss, victory and defeat, so many things happen, small way or big way. So, we should train our mind to keep everything absolutely calm and quiet. Many years back, I read a beautiful incident, probably in Reader's Digest, I do not remember, but this was a real incident that had happened. There was a navigator of a ship, huge ship. A new young man had joined. This young boy, probably 14, 15 years old, and the pilot had taken him, navigator, the ship's commander, had taken him under his protection. And as soon as the person joined, soon after that, the in charge of the ship called him and said, "My son, I am giving you an advice. Supposing you happen to slip from this ship, fall by accident or whatever, into the waters. Do not try desperately to struggle. Just maintain so that you will not drown and breathe very calm and quiet. Because as soon as I come to know that we are missing you, I am missing you, I will come looking for you." And strange to say, it so happened that one day, accidentally, the boy slipped, fell into the water. Nobody took notice. The ship went forward and practically 10 to 12 hours it sailed on. Suddenly somebody noticed this young chap was absent and they informed the pilot, and immediately he ordered the ship. Where was the last place anybody had seen this young man? So the ship was taken to that place. And then to their great amazement or even shock, they found this young man just about floating, and they rescued him. Then the pilot asked him, "My son, how did you happen to be surviving so long?" Then the young man smiled and said, "Sir, do you remember, you only advised me that not to panic, but do your best to keep floating. As soon as we notice, we will come back. I knew you are going to come back. So my task is to keep alive until you come and rescue me. And I know you will come, and you have come." And the pilot was highly pleased. What is this incident? That is, every sadhaka should go on, never losing hope, keeping complete faith in the words of the Guru. He should move forward, never cease attempting. That is called yati, means yatamana, striving all the time. And if God allows a person to strive, it means only one thing, that God is allowing us to become a fit person to receive His grace. If God seems not to bestow His grace, the only reason could be that He knows that we are still to work ourselves so that we could receive God's grace. It is not that He is withholding His grace. He is waiting for the right time so that His grace could be received and kept up. Receive, not only to receive the grace, but to retain the grace is a very important thing. So here, the Lord is telling what we should do. In our last class, we have discussed that when the mind becomes, through a long time practice, to fix itself on the one object only, which is God, then it becomes absolutely still. And for that, an analogy has been given, just as a lamp, which is kept in a windless or airless place, doesn't at all have the slightest flicker. So also, a mind of the yogi, which doesn't think anything else excepting God, will be like that, absolutely unflickering, means not allowing any other thoughts to enter into the mind, but completely focused upon God unflickeringly. That is the one of the characteristics of a advanced yogi. Yatha dipo nivatasto na ingate sa upama smrita. Yoginaha yatachittasya yunjataha yogam atmanaha. The picture of a disciplined mind of the yogi practicing constant meditation on God is compared to a lamp placed in a windless place which does not at all flicker. Here flicker means no other thought will come excepting the thought of the God. Naturally the question comes, okay, I will try to attain to that state. What do I gain by this? The Lord is replying, Yatra uparamate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra cha eva atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. The state in which karbhurdo, the practice through the practice of yoga, the mind becomes still, and in which realizing God through subtle reason, purified by such meditation on God, the soul rejoices only in God. Two points are to be noted here, that when a yogi constantly strives to fix his mind on God, then he reaches such a state where no other thought, meaning no other thought, no worldly thought, excepting the thought of God, ever is cherished by him. And what is the result? He attains, he rejoices only in God. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, there was a time when I did not relish anything. My mind was constantly restless, seeking where is the talk about God, singing about God, or scriptures being explained about God. I used to run to those places and rejoice only in those things. Then such a yogi, his joy is incomparable. After all, this is a very interesting question. How do we know which joy is the greatest joy in this world? Which pleasure is the greatest pleasure? Because we are endowed with 5 sense organs. And every sense organ is vying with the other. I want my happiness. I want my happiness. Rarely does a person get where all the sense organs come together and say, I only get this kind of happiness and this is what I am seeking. Any amount of Vishayananda, sensory pleasure, can never be compared to the great happiness that we get from God. Now here two terms are used actually. One is pleasure. Pleasure means that which is absolutely temporary. Just as when there is a hot burning pan, one drop of water and it just sizzles and disappears. That is the called kshanika sukha, momentary pleasure. By that time we realize it's already gone. Only the memory remains. Experience is gone, but the memory only remains. But this yogi, he overcomes time. That means time cannot limit the amount of pleasure that he derives from God. God means here his own self. It is timeless. Timeless means infinite. Timeless means eternal. Why use two terms, both eternal and infinite? I am sure I had explained it in my past classes. Infinity refers to varieties of happiness. As it is, human being is endowed with 5 sense organs. And every sense organ comes across millions, means countless number of objects. Simple example, the tongue wants the 5 types of tastes, and each 5 types of taste, and there are infinite variations are there. That is why simple example is, a man says, I feel like eating a sweet, and he goes, approaches a shop, and he is bewildered, because there is not sweet, there are infinite number of sweets are there. All are sweets. But what a variation in their special tastes. If a person is given plenty of one type of sweet, he becomes thoroughly dissatisfied and says, I wish to taste the other varieties of sweets also. It's just an example. Every sense organ has unnumbered amount of manifestations of enjoyment or pleasure. But if a person can enjoy all these pleasures simultaneously, not only of the almost infinite varieties of every sense organ, but the pleasures of every sense organ, all the 5 sense organs in all its varieties at the same time and for a long time, if it is all the pleasures combined, it is called infinity. if that pleasure lasts for an infinite amount of time, and that is called eternal. This is the difference between infinity means horizontal, eternal means vertical. There is nothing the man can really want. Here is a peculiar psychology. Even the smallest pleasure, so long as the mind is experiencing that pleasure, and that pleasure becomes infinite and eternal happiness until it lasts, then again we want something else. But there is something else. What is it? It is not the pleasures, it is not the happiness, it is the bliss. Bliss is a term that is coined to indicate both infinity and eternity. And all other things are manifestations of the same bliss, but divided by time and space and object. Every man wants only happiness. Here is a peculiar theory. Many people, they go to Tirupati Venkateshwara, God, and say, "So Lord, I desire this, please grant me this." The foolish person doesn't stop to think, why do I want, say for example, money? Why do I want power? Why do I want specialized knowledge, etc.? The only answer that can come is, I become happy when I obtain this. Then why don't you ask the Lord, "Oh Lord, you don't need to give me anything, but give me that pure happiness. That's all I want." This is another way of rephrasing the same question. I want only bliss. Other word, other name for this bliss is God. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Why don't we ask, "Oh Lord, I want you. Because if I get you, I become Ananda Swarupa. And when I become Ananda Swarupa, I get every type of pleasure that can be imagined and much more." So here is the one, says, "Nay, in which the soul experiences, the soul of the yogi experiences the eternal and super sensuous joy, which can be apprehended only through the subtle and purified intellect, and wherein established, the said yogi moves not from truth on any account." Beautiful Sanskrit shloka. Sukham atyantikam yattad buddhigrahyam atindriyam veti yatra nachayeva ayam sthitah chalati tatvatah. Having obtained which, a yogi does not wish in three times, past, present and future, "I want to obtain something else." Meaning, he has reached the highest. Because he has reached the highest, there is no more desire left in him. That is the result of practicing this yoga constantly, becoming absolutely one with God through the practice of meditation. Sukham atyantikam. Atyantikam means than which there is nothing higher. Such kind of happiness. What type of happiness? That is atindriyam. No sense organ can ever contain it. Because another meaning of sense organ is that which limits our happiness through time and space is called an indriya or sense organ. And buddhigrahyam. Only the soul experiences through the purified intellect that "I am God. I am Satchidananda." That is the nature of that happiness. Veti yatra nachayeva ayam sthitaschaliti tatvatah. And this yogi knows, "I have obtained God. I have become of the nature of Ananda." And having established himself in that, he never feels like moving. Why doesn't he feel like moving? Because he knows that is the highest. Why doesn't he feel like moving? Because there the mind itself doesn't function anymore. Even to say, "This is the highest, I want to move away from this," these are all functions of the lower mind. Having been established through a long practice of yoga, through many, many births, when a yogi reaches that state, he enjoys that bliss of himself which is indescribable, and he never wants to move, and there is no need for him to move at all. Then, in the 22nd sloka, something very important is being conveyed to us. Yam labdhvacha aparam labham manyate na adhikam tataha yasmin sthitaha na dukkhena gurunapi vichalyate. Having obtained which happiness, he does not reckon any other gain as greater than that, and established in which he is not shaken even by the heaviest of sorrows. Let me rephrase this in a way. Having obtained God, which he doesn't reckon that any other gain, because there is no other greater gain than God, or there is no other gain greater than infinity, having obtained that one and permanently established in that state, such a yogi is not shaken even by the heaviest of sorrows. Now the curious question comes, when a yogi is completely established in God, where is the question of being buffeted by sorrows and other things? No. Really, in that state, there is no, not even the mind. Then what about these, all these greatest of sorrows? It is linked to the condition of the body, even if such a yogi has a body, and where there is a body, there is going to be a mind. And sometimes if the person is living, and such people are called jivan muktas, free while living, even those persons, they have the body and mind. They don't say, I am the body mind. They don't even feel that I have a body and mind. They just are established. It is the divine will which takes hold of that body mind and performs whatever it is supposed to live, how long it lives, what is it is supposed to do, whether it wants to teach to others, whether it wants to simply remain in meditation, etc. This is not controlled by that individual mind. This is completely determined, willed by the divine Lord. And if such a person is cut into pieces also, then he doesn't feel at all. He will be floating only in the ocean of bliss. Let me give you two examples that come to my mind immediately. There was a great soul, and he was called Sadashiva Brahmendra, and he has written so many beautiful kirtans like Pibari, Ramarasam, Khelati Brahmande Bhagavan, etc., etc. Once he was moving absolutely naked, merged in the bliss of God. He did not know what, where he was moving, what he was doing. The body was moving by the will of God. What happened? Unfortunately or fortunately, he happened to move in the camp of a Nawab with all his harem wives. And this Nawab had taken great offense. A Hindu kafir moving naked among the people who were not allowed. No male was allowed there. So he took his sword, ran after this yogi and cut off his hand. The hand has fallen bleeding, but the man did not even seem to notice it. He went on walking. Somehow the Nawab, it dawned in him that this is not an ordinary person. He must be the greatest God-realized soul, fakir. So with great regret in his heart, he started running after this Sadashiva Brahmendra. And after a long time, when Sadashiva Brahmendra was showing signs of coming back to external consciousness, then suddenly this Nawab went, fell down at his feet and said, "Sir, I did not know you were a Mahatma. Please pardon me." Sadashiva Brahmendra was surprised. "What did you do? I don't know what you have done to me." He was unconscious that his hand was cut off. Then Nawab pointed out the fact. Sadashiva Brahmendra smiled and he just passed one of his remaining hands on the place where the hand was cut off, and it is said miraculously a new hand, or I don't know, the old hand has come up and he became whole. This is a miracle, certainly miraculous in instance, but that's not the point. The point is, even if death comes, even if suffering comes, they are not at all aware of this particular fact. It is said, such great souls, even if their body seem to be going through greatest so-called suffering in the eyes of other people, it is nothing, as if they were looking in a cinema where certain things are happening. Second instance I recall is Sri Ramakrishna himself. He was suffering at that time from incurable throat cancer, and the pain was so great sometimes. When Sri Ramakrishna, he used to come down to our level and feel the body consciousness, then he used to feel this great pain. And at that time, other people used to feel also very pained. This was the condition. And one day, the young Hari, later on Swami Turiyananda, he happened to come there, and Sri Ramakrishna put up an act of, as though he was suffering, said, "Look how much I am suffering." And Hari Maharaj was replying, "No, sir, I see you are swimming in Sachidananda Sagara, in the ocean of divine bliss." And Sri Ramakrishna smiled and said, "This rascal found me out." This is the most natural condition of every realized soul. Even what we call something befalls to his body or circumstances, they themselves are not aware of it, because they are ever established in the ocean of Sachidananda, identifying themselves with God himself. So this point is being stated here. Yam labdhva cha aparam labham. Having obtained which realization, no other gain is considered greater than that. After all, what could be greater than God? Na anyat manyate na adhikam tataha. No other gain is greater than that. Yasmin sthitaha na dukhena guruna api vichalyate. Having been established in which state, even the greatest of suffering befalls him, he is not moved at all. That means his mind will not move a millimeter from that state of Sachidananda. And then in the 23rd verse, we are being given one of the most wonderful definitions of yoga. Remember, in the Bhagavad Gita, we get three beautiful definitions of what is yoga. The first definition is yoga karmasu kaushalam. Yoga is dexterity in action. And here dexterity not only means the skillfulness, that means a yogi, whatever he does it in a very short time, because he can put his whole mind in whatever he is doing it. There is said an incident about Swami Vivekananda. I recall one day in America, he went out for a walk with his close associates, and he was to return back soon and conduct a lecture. But it was past the time, and his friends reminded him, "Swami, it is time for you to go to the auditorium and deliver the lecture." Slowly he came back, and the building where he had to hold the class, his room was upstairs. The others walked into the hall. All that they needed was to cross that few rooms. To their great shock, when they entered into the hall, they found out Swamiji had already changed his dress and he was walking in front of them and climbing the podium. They were surprised. We did not stop on the way. We just crossed the room, and meanwhile we saw Swami going upstairs. And when did he reach his room? And it takes some time to undo all the dress, undress and dress again for the talk, and again come down, and we see earlier. It remains a great mystery whether Swami Vivekananda has used any yogic power for that purpose. We do not know. But whatever it is, great people can do anything very, very short time, because they use all their intelligence all their energy and completely focused upon that. Therefore, they could finish anything in the shortest possible time. That is the superficial meaning of dexterity in action. But there is a deeper meaning. The teachers of Vedanta give us another interpretation. That interpretation is, in this world, every action leads to a particular result. Even a simple action like flicking a switch down gives one result, which is in India that the light comes on. In America, of course, it is the opposite way. It doesn't matter. And again, flicking the switch up puts off the light. Meaning, every single action gives an absolutely particular result. If 10 actions, 10 different results. If 1,000 actions, 1,000 results. But for a yogi, he may do 10,000 actions, but he gets only one result. What is that result? I want God. That is the only result I want. I want to know who I am really. I want to know I am the Self. I want to know I am Brahman. This is the only result that is wanted. This directing, doing many actions, but desiring only one result is called karmasu kaushalam, dexterity in action. This is one of the most wonderful definitions. Then, the second definition is samatvam yoga vichyate. Whatever be the circumstances, happy or unhappy, and good or evil, life or death, the mind of a yogi constantly remains pointing only towards God, and that is called samatva, means serenity, absolute peacefulness. There is no deviation from the thought of God. That samatva, buddhi, accepting every incident, whether we call it good or bad, in the same light as an aid towards spiritual progress, and be joyful, accepting everything in a most positive light, and that is called samatvam yoga vichyate. And here in the next shloka, 23rd shloka, Lord Krishna is giving the third definition. What is that definition? That tam vidyat dukkha sanyoga viyogam yoga sannitam sanischayena yoktavyo yogaha anirvinna chetasa. That state called yoga, which is state which is free from the contact of sorrow in the form of transmigration, should be known. Nay, this yoga should be resolutely practiced with an unwearied mind. Tam vidya, that state is called true yoga. What is that state? Dukkha sanyoga viyogam. Even the greatest sorrow overtakes such a yogi, either physically or mentally. Even if it takes, as if, like a lotus leaf that always in the water but never becomes wet, such type, this person is not affected even by the greatest sorrow in this world. He remains fixed in that highest state of God union. That is defined as yoga. This definition is a beautiful definition. What is the benefit? That if I become a yogi, whatever happens, I am always happy. A yogi is always happy because he is identified with non-body, non-mind, which is God, not with the body and mind. Therefore, this is a good logic, good reasoning, good motivation why a person should go on practicing yoga. Sa nischayena yoktavyaha yogaha anirvinna chetasa. Nirvinna means depression. Anirvinna means not at all being depressed. Continuously happy. I am happy, I am going towards God. I am happier, I am going towards God. I am happiest because I am going towards God. Therefore, the benefit even for worldly people, for anybody, is spirituality is a state of the greatest happiness in spite of whatever happens in life, good, bad, corona or no corona, poverty or riches, it doesn't matter whether a person is married or unmarried, whether he becomes rich or poor, whether he is in good health or not so good health, all these are completely immaterial. After all, this is what we are all seeking. Therefore, spiritual life is always beneficial, not only in a spiritual manner, it is also beneficial in worldly matters too. For example, if an artist is spiritual, he can produce the greatest art. If a scientist is spiritual, then he can reach the truth in this physical world much more quickly than anybody else. Here is the beautiful logic, reason why we all should become spiritual. Now, one doubt, small doubt may come here. Supposing a person doesn't believe in God, then can he be spiritual? And Vedanta categorically tells us there is no need to believe in anything. If a person moves forward in a particular path, whether he believes that such and such a town or place is there or not, it doesn't really matter. If he goes on moving in the right direction, sooner or later he reaches that particular place. Then what is the benefit of belief? Belief means we can measure whether we are going towards our goal or not. And a yogi can also measure how much he is progressing in his yoga simply through this fact that I am immune to whatever is happening in this world. Not immune in the sense of being a stone and unfailing, but in the sense nothing really touches me. I am always happy. Not only that, even if someone considers me as his greatest enemy, I will always consider him as my own self. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma. Myself is manifesting in every body, through every mind. Therefore, yoga is not only beneficial for spiritual people, it is highly beneficial for everybody. That's why Swami Vivekananda had said that Vedanta helps a fisherman, a student, a housewife, a carpenter, a goldsmith, a king, anybody. Because yoga is such a wonderful state of the mind where the mind manifests its greatest powers, its greatest concentration, and brings out the innate ananda which is there inside, and also knowledge. Then the Lord is also pointing some other qualities. If we want to become successful in yoga, we also have to move forward. We have to do something. What is it? Sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva sarvan aseshatah manasa eva indriya gramam viniyamya samantatah. These are related shlokas. I will read, then I will discuss this. Including this 24th, 25th and 26th shlokas must be read together. Shanehi shanehi uparamet buddhya dhriti grihitaya atma samstam manakritva nakinchidapi chintaye yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astiram tatah tato niyamya etat atmanyeva vasham naye. Completely renouncing all the desires arising from thoughts of the world and fully restraining the whole of the senses from all sides, and aspiring yogi should through gradual practice attain tranquility, and fixing the mind on God through reason, controlled by steadfastness, he should not think of anything else. Drawing back the restless and fidgety mind from all those objects after which it runs, he should repeatedly fix it on God. How to practice yoga? Yoga means keeping the mind all the time fixed on God as much as possible. We know that it is a worthy goal. the highest goal. That's why it is called Parama Purusharta, the highest Purusharta, Mukti, Nishreyasa. These are all wonderful words used, but perhaps one particular word would remind us the goal of every spiritual aspirant, Samadhi. Samadhi is the name for the highest state where the aspirant knows, I am God. That is the state of Samadhi. It is not easy. It takes a long time. That's why the Lord also points out, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. After millions and millions and millions of births, a person slowly progressing from birth to birth, ultimately attains me, Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate. Such a soul attains me. And what does he do? That Vasudevaha Sarvam Iti. Everything is nothing but Vasudeva, Krishna, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahma, Samahatma, Sudurlabha. Such a great soul is very difficult for us to obtain. For that, we have to start somewhere. And here is a yogi, he is being given advice. What is the advice? Sankalpa Prabhavan Kama. When we sit for meditation, various thoughts oppress our minds. So we have to keep an eye on them and say, oh my mind, do not think of anything else. It is not worthy of being thought. The only thought that is being worthy to cultivate is the thought of God. Sarvan, Kaman, Aseshan, Tyaktva. Slowly give up everything. Completely. And Aseshataha, completely. Not only all the desires, but completely. Manasa eva indriya gramam viniyamya. Controlling all the senses. Slowly, slowly. Samantataha in every way. Other words, keep a watch over the mind that it thinks only of God and doesn't think of anything else. But sometimes it is also good to think that other thoughts are worthless thoughts. Because as we go on devaluing them, our strength of our desire becomes weak towards those objects. So that is how slowly, slowly we have to get rid of them. Then here is a beautiful one. We must be persevering. We must be having infinite patience. Shanaihi, shanaihi. This is not a task that can be accomplished in a day. Mind control cannot be attained in a day. Shanaihi, shanaihi. Slowly, slowly. Uparamet. One should withdraw one's attention or thinking from these sense objects. Dhriti grihitaya, with infinite patience. Dhriti means the capacity to go on persisting until we attain our goal, even if it takes a billion billion births. Then, atma samstam anakritva, keeping the mind completely fixed only on the thought of the atman, and nakinchidapi chintayet, without thinking anything else. Of course, thoughts will come. Every time it comes, you say, no, that's not good. Let me think about God. The same fact is being told here. Yato, yato, nischarati. Nischalati, nischarati. Manaha, chanchalam, astiram. The nature of the mind is, first of all, it is restless. Astiram means it doesn't have the capacity to persist on a thought even long time. One of the strangest things is, if I ask anybody, you love a sweet and you meditate upon that sweet because you love it. But such is the nature of the mind, man cannot think of even his most beloved objects for a long time. It becomes very restless, asthiram. It is incapable of concentrating for a long time even on the most beloved object. Yataha yataha, whenever the mind strays away from the thought of God, because it is restless, because it is impatient, because it doesn't have that strength of perseverance. Tataha tataha. Again and again and again. Niyamya etat. Bring it under control. Bring it under control. Whenever it moves, Do not get annoyed. If you get annoyed, that is even worse enemy than anything else. Patiently bring it back and try to fix it upon God. That way, Vasham Nayet, slowly, a yogi constantly striving must try to bring his mind to one-pointedness and fix it on God. For fixing it on God, two conditions are necessary. One condition is that the worthlessness, that the valuelessness of sensory objects must be kept in mind, and one must be convinced of the existence of God, one must be convinced of the worthiness. Even if we believe in God, we may not feel a desire for God. The reason is, we have not realized how wonderful it is to think about God, to realize God, to move towards God. The essence of these three shlokas is, it is the nature of the mind to be restless, it is the nature of the mind, it doesn't have the capacity to stick on to one thought, and it doesn't realize the greatness of God, and it only for a long time became accustomed to enjoy these worldly objects. Therefore, to remove it from being attached to these worldly objects and to develop attachment to God and to slowly bring it under control so that it remains focused on God and it doesn't deviate from that state of thinking about God, it will take a long, long time. One must have the quality of what is called perseverance, the quality of persistence, and the quality of sticking to one truth, whatever comes. We can imagine what a tremendous amount of willpower is needed for that. So these are the most necessary conditions, and we have to develop. Unfortunately, there is no other shortcut. But if we are earnest, sincere, and go on doing our best, the grace of God will come. And this fact is being reiterated by Sri Ramakrishna. If anybody takes one step towards me, I am going to take 10 steps towards him. That means, if we show our earnestness and sincerity, sooner or later, and sooner rather than later, God will bestow his grace upon us, and we are sure to progress, and we enjoy, really enjoy, and know our human life is a worthy life. A further beautiful shlokas we will discuss in our next class. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramartanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum. May Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all.